an expression of bemused dismay. "You are an idiot, Reshi." Bass drew his hand back, and the weariness was gone. He pointed across the bar where Chronicler stood watching. "Bring the food," he pointed at Kvothe. "Tell the story." Then he spun on his heel, walked back to his chair by the hearth, and lowered himself into it as if it were a throne. He clapped his hands twice sharply. "Entertain me," he said with a wide, mad smile, and even from where the others stood near the bar, they could see the blood on his teeth. Chapter 137 Questions. While the mayor of Levenshire seemed to approve of how I'd handled the false troopers, I knew matters weren't as simple as that. According to the Iron Law, I was guilty of at least 3 egregious crimes, any one of which would be enough to see me hanged. Unfortunately, everyone in Levenshire knew my name and description, and I worried the story might run ahead of me on the road. If that happened, I could easily come to a town where the local constables would do their duty and lock me up until a traveling magistrate arrived to judge my case. So I made my best speed towards Severin. I put in 2 days of hard walking, then paid for a seat on a coach heading south. Rumor travels fast, but you can keep ahead of it if you're willing to ride hard and lose a little sleep. After 3 days of bone-jarring ride, I arrived in Severin. The coach entered the city by the eastern gate, and for the first time, I saw the gibbet Braden had told me about. The sight of the bleached bones in the iron cage did not ease my anxieties. The mayor had put a man in there for simple banditry. What might he do to someone who had slaughtered 9 traveling players on the road? I was sorely tempted to head straight to the 4 Tapers, where I hoped to find Denna, despite what the Cathay had said. But I was covered in several days of grime and sweat. I needed a bath and a brush before I spoke with anyone. As soon as I was inside the mayor's estate, I sent a ring and note to Stapes, knowing it would be the quickest way to get in touch with the mayor for a private conversation. I made it back to my room with little delay, though it meant brushing roughly past a few courtiers in the halls. I had just set down my travel sack and sent runners for hot water when Stapes appeared in the doorway.
"Young Master Kvothe," he beamed, grabbing my hand to shake it. "It's good to have you back. Lord and lady, but I've been worried about you."
His enthusiasm wrung a tired smile from me. "It's good to be back, Stapes. Have I missed much?"
"Much?" he laughed. "The wedding, for one."
"Wedding?" I asked, but I knew the answer as soon as I said it. "The mayor's wedding?" Stapes nodded excitedly.
"Oh, it was a grand thing. It's a shame you had to be gone for it, considering."
He gave a knowing look, but didn't say anything else. Stapes was always very discreet. "They didn't waste much time, did they?"
"It's been 2 months since the betrothal," Stapes said with a hint of reproach. "Not a bit less than proper."
I saw him relax a bit, and he gave me a wink.
"Which isn't to say they weren't both a bit eager."
I chuckled as runner boys came through the open door with buckets of steaming water. The splashing as they began to fill the bath was like sweet music. The manservant watched them leave, then leaned close and said in a quieter voice,
"You'll be glad to hear our other unresolved matter has been tended to properly."
I looked at him blankly, searching through my memory for what he might be referring to. So much had happened since I'd left. Stape saw my expression.
"Codicus,"
he said, his mouth twisting bitterly around the name.
"Dagon brought him back only 2 days after you left. He'd gone to ground not 10 miles from the city."
"So close?" I asked, surprised. Stapes nodded grimly.
"He was tucked away in a farmhouse like a badger in a burrow. He killed 4 of the mayor's personal guard and cost Dagon an eye. In the end, they only caught him by setting fire to the place."
"And what happened then?" I asked. "Not a trial, certainly."
"The matter was tended to," Stapes repeated. "Properly."
He said the last with a great weight of grim finality. His normally kind eyes were narrow with hate. In that moment, the round-faced little man looked very little like a grocer at all. I remembered Alvaron calmly saying, "Take off his thumbs." Given what I knew of Alvaron's swift and decisive anger, I doubted anyone would ever see Cauticus again. Did the mayor manage to uncover why? Even though I spoke softly, I left the rest unsaid, knowing Stapes would not approve of my mentioning the poisoning openly.
"It's not my place to say," Stapes said carefully.
His tone was slightly offended, as if I should know better than to ask him such things. I let the subject go, knowing that I wouldn't be able to get anything else out of Stapes.
"You'd be doing me a favor if you could deliver something to the mayor for me," I said, walking to where I dropped my worn travel sack.
I rooted through it until I found the mayor's lockbox down near the bottom. I held it out to Stapes. "I'm not sure what's in it," I said, "but it's got his crest on the top, and it's heavy. I hope it might be some of the taxes that were stolen." I smiled. "Tell him it's a wedding present."
Stapes took hold of the box, smiling.
"I'm sure he'll be delighted."
3 more runners appeared, but only 2 of them ran past with steaming buckets. The 3rd went to Stapes and handed him a note. There was more splashing in the other room, and all 3 of the boys left again, stealing glances at me. Stapes skimmed the note, then looked up at me.
"The mayor is hoping it would be convenient for you to meet him in the garden at 5th Bell," he said.
The garden meant polite conversation. If the mayor had wanted a serious discussion, he would have summoned me to his rooms, or paid me a call through the secret passage that connected his rooms with mine. I looked at the clock on the wall. It wasn't a sympathy clock of the sort I was used to at the university. This was a harmony clock, swinging pendulum and all. Beautiful machinery, but not nearly as accurate. Its hands showed a quarter to the hour.
"Is that clock fast, Stapes?" I asked hopefully.
15 minutes was barely enough time for me to strip out of my road clothes and lace myself into some sufficiently decorous court finery. But given the layers of dirt and sour sweat that covered me, that would be as pointless as tying a silk ribbon around a steaming cow pat. Stapes looked over my shoulder, then checked a small gear watch he kept in his pocket.
"It looks about 5 minutes slow, actually."
I rubbed my face, considering my options. I wasn't simply mussed from a day's travel. I was filthy. I had walked hard under the summer sun, then spent days trapped in a stifling hot carriage. While the mayor was not one to judge things entirely by appearances, he did value propriety. I would not make a good impression if I showed up reeking and filthy. Unbidden, the memory of the iron gibbet rose up in my mind, and I decided I couldn't risk making a bad impression. Not with the news I brought.
"Stapes, I won't be ready for at least an hour. I could meet with him at 6th Bell if he would like."
Stapes's expression turned stiff and affronted. Its message was clear. "You simply didn't request a different meeting time with the Mayor Alvaron. He asked. You came. That was the way of things."
"Stapes," I said as gently as I could, "look at me. Smell me. I've come 300 miles in the last span of days. I'm not going to go strolling in the garden covered in road dust and reeking like a barbarian."
Stapes's mouth firmed into a frown.
"I'll tell him you're otherwise occupied."
More steaming buckets arrived.
"Tell him the truth, Stapes," I said as I began to unbutton my shirt. "I'm sure he'll understand."
After I was scrubbed, brushed, and properly dressed, I sent the mayor my golden ring and a card that said, "Private conversation at your earliest convenience." Within an hour, a runner returned with a card from the mayor saying, "Await my summons." I waited. I sent a runner to fetch dinner, then waited the rest of the evening. The following day passed without any further message, and because I didn't know when Alvaron's summons might come, I was effectively trapped in my rooms again, waiting for his ring. It was nice to have time to catch up on my sleep and have a second bath, but I was worried about the news from Levenshire catching up with me. The fact that I couldn't make my way down to Severin Low to look for Denna was a vast irritation as well. It was the sort of silent rebuke all too common in courtly settings. The mayor's message was clear. When I call, you come. My terms, or not at all. It was childish in the way only the nobility can be. Still, there was nothing to be done. So I sent my silver ring to Braden. He arrived in time to share supper with me and caught me up on the season's worth of gossip I'd missed. Court rumor can be terribly insipid stuff, but Braden skimmed the cream off the top for me. Most of it centered around the mayor's whirlwind courtship and marriage to the lackless heir. They were besotted with each other, apparently. Many suspected a child might already be on the way. The royal court in Rhaenyra was busy, too. The prince regent Aletus had been killed in a duel, sending much of the southern feral into chaos as various nobility did their best to capitalize on the death of such a highly ranked member of the court. There were rumors, too. The mayor's men had taken care of some bandits off in a remote piece of the Eld. They'd been waylaying tax collectors, apparently. There was grumbling in the north, where folk had to suffer a second visit from the mayor's collectors. But at least the roads were clear again, and those responsible were dead. Braden also mentioned an interesting rumor of a young man who had gone to visit Felurian and come back more or less intact, though slightly fey around the edges. It wasn't a court rumor, exactly. More the sort of thing you heard in a tap room. A low sort of rumor no highborn person would ever deign to lend an ear to. His dark, owlish eyes glittered merrily as he spoke. I agreed that such stories were indeed quite low and beneath the notice of fine persons such as ourselves. My cloak? It was rather fine, was it not? I couldn't remember where exactly I'd had it tailored. Somewhere exotic. By the way, I'd heard quite an interesting song the other day on the subject of Felurian. Would he like to hear it? We also played tack, of course. Despite the fact that I had spent a long time away from the board, Braden said my playing was much improved. It seemed I was learning how to play a beautiful game. Needless to say, when Alvaron sent his next summons, I came. I was tempted to arrive a few minutes late, but I resisted, knowing no good could come of it. The mayor was walking about on his own when I met him in the garden. He stood straight and tall, looking for all the world as if he'd never needed to lean on my arm or use a walking stick. "Quoth," he smiled warmly. "I'm glad you could find time to visit me." "Always my pleasure, Your Grace." "Shall we walk?" he asked. "The view is pleasant from the South Bridge this time of day." I fell into step beside him, and we began to wind our way among the carefully tended hedges. "I could not help but notice that you are armed," he remarked, disapproval heavy on his voice. My hand went unconsciously to Sasura. It was at my hip now, rather than over my shoulder. "Is there aught amiss with that, Your Grace? I have understood that all men keep the right to gird themselves in Vintus." "It is hardly proper," he stressed the word. "I understand that in the King's Court in Rhaenyra there's not a gentleman would dare be seen without a sword." "Well spoken as you are no gentleman," Alvaron pointed out coolly. "As you would do well to remember." I said nothing. "Besides, it is a barbarian custom, and one that will bring the king to grief in time. No matter what the custom in Rhaenyra, in my city, my house, and my garden, you will not come before me armed." He turned to look at me with hard eyes. "I apologize if I have given any offense, Your Grace." I stopped and offered him a more earnest bow than the one I'd given before. My show of submission seemed to appease him. He smiled and laid a hand on my shoulder. "There's no need for all that. Come, look at the morning fire. The leaves will be turning soon." We walked for a piece of an hour, chatting amiably about small nothings. I was unfailingly polite, and Alvaron's mood continued to improve. If catering to his ego kept me in his good graces, it was a small price to pay for his patronage. "I must say that marriage suits Your Grace." "Thank you," he nodded graciously. "I have found it much to my liking." "And your health continues well?" I asked, pressing the boundaries of public conversation. "Exceeding well," he said. "Another benefit of married life, no doubt." He gave me a look that told me he would not appreciate further inquiry. At least, not in so public a place as this. We continued our walk, nodding to the nobles we passed. The mayor chatted on about trivialities, rumors in the court. I played along, filling my part in the conversation. But the truth was, I needed to have done with this so we could have an earnest conversation in private. But I also knew Alvaran could not be rushed into a discussion. Our talks had a ritual pattern. If I violated that, I would do nothing but annoy him. So I bided my time, smelled the flowers, and pretended interest in the gossip of the court. After a quarter hour, there was a characteristic pause in the conversation. Next, we would engage in an argument. After that, we could go somewhere private enough to speak of important matters. "I have always thought," Alvaran said at last, introducing the topic of our discussion, "that everyone has a question that rests in the center of who they are."
"How do you mean, Your Grace?"
"I believe everyone has some question that drives them, a question that keeps them awake nights, a question they worry like a dog with an old bone. If you understand a man's question, it brings you closer to understanding the man himself."
He looked sideways at me, half smiling.
"Or so I have always believed."
I thought on it for a moment.
"I would have to agree with you, Your Grace."
Alvaran raised an eyebrow at this.
"As easy as that?"
He sounded slightly disappointed.
"I was expecting a bit of a struggle from you."
I shook my head, glad for the easy opportunity to introduce a topic of my own.
"I've been worrying at a question for some years now, and I expect I will worry it some few years more. So what you say makes a perfect sense to me."
"Really?" he said hungrily.
"What is it?"
I considered telling him the truth, about my search for the Chandrian and the death of my troop, but there was no real chance of that. The secret still sat in my heart, heavy as a great smooth stone. It was too personal a thing to tell someone as clever as the mayor. What's more, it would reveal my Edema Rue blood, something I had not made public knowledge in the mayor's court. The mayor knew I wasn't nobility, but he didn't know my blood was quite so low as that.
"It must be a heavy question for you to take so long in weighing it," Alvaran joked as I hesitated.
"Come, I insist. In fact, I will offer you a trade. A question for a question. Mayhap we will help each other to an answer."
I could hardly hope for better encouragement than that. I thought for a moment, choosing my words carefully.
"Where are the Aemir?"
"The bloody-handed Aemir," Alvaran mused softly to himself. He glanced sideways at me.
"I assume you're not asking where their bodies are bestowed."
"No, Your Grace," I said somberly. His face turned thoughtful.
"Interesting."
I drew a relieved breath. I had half expected him to give a flip response, to tell me the Aemir were centuries dead. Instead, he said,
"I studied the Aemir a great deal when I was younger, you know."
"Truly, Your Grace?" I said, surprised by my own good luck. He looked at me, a ghost of a smile touching his lips.
"Not that surprising. I wanted to be one of the Aemir when I was a boy."
He looked ever so slightly embarrassed.
"Not all the stories are dark, you know. They did important things. They made hard choices that no one else was willing to. That sort of thing frightens people, but I believe they were a great force for good."
"I've always thought so too," I admitted.
"Out of curiosity, which was your favorite story?"
"Etrayon," Alvaran said a little wistfully.
"I haven't thought of that in years."
"I could probably recite the 8 oaths of Etrayon from memory." He shook his head and glanced in my direction.
"And you?"
"Etrayon is a bit bloody for me," I admitted. Alvaran looked amused.
"They weren't called the bloody-handed Aemir for nothing," he said.
"The tattoos of the Ciri Day were hardly decorative."
"True," I admitted. "Still, I prefer Sir Savian."
"Of course," he said, nodding. "You're a romantic." We walked in silence for a moment, turning a corner and strolling past a fountain.
"I was enamored with them as a child," Alvaran said at last, as if confessing something slightly embarrassing.
"Men and women with all the power of the church behind them. And that was at a time when all the power of Aetur stood behind the church."
He smiled.
brave, fierce, and answerable to no one save themselves and God.
And other emir, I added.
And ultimately the pontifex, he finished.
I assume you've read his proclamation declaiming them?
Yes.
We came to a small arching bridge of wood and stone, then stopped at the top of the arch and looked out over the water, watching the swans maneuver slowly on the current.
Do you know what I found when I was younger? The mayor asked.
I shook my head.
Once I'd grown too old for children's stories of the Emir, I started wondering more specific things. How many Emir were there? How many were gentry? How many horse could they put to field for an armed action?
He turned slightly to gauge my reaction.
I was in Felton at the time. They have an old Aeturan mendery where they keep church records for the whole of the Northern Ferrol. I looked through their books for 2 days. Do you know what I found?
Nothing, I said.
You didn't find anything.
Alvaron turned to look at me. His expression held a carefully controlled surprise.
I found the same thing at the university, I said. It seemed as if someone had removed information about the Emir from the archives there. Not everything, of course, but there were scarce few solid details. I could see the mayor's own conclusions sparking to life behind his clever gray eyes.
And who would do such a thing? He prompted.
Who would have better reason than the Emir themselves? I said. Which means they are still around. Somewhere.
Thus your question.
Alvaron started walking again, slower than before.
Where are the Emir?
We left the stone bridge and began to walk the path around the pond, the mayor's face full of serious thought.
Would you believe I had the same thought after searching in the mendery? He asked me. I thought the Emir might have avoided being brought to trial, gone into hiding. I thought there might even be Emir in the world after all this while, acting in secret for the greater good.
I could feel the excitement bubbling in my chest.
What did you discover?
I asked eagerly.
Discover?
Alvaron looked surprised.
Nothing. My father died that year and I became mayor. I dismissed it as a boyish fancy.
He looked out over the water and the gently gliding swans.
But if you found this same thing half a world away,
he trailed off.
And I drew the same conclusion, Your Grace.
Alvaron nodded slowly.
It is disturbing that there might be a secret this important.
He looked around the garden, at the walls of his estate.
And in my own lands. I don't like that.
He turned back to me, his eyes sharp and clear.
How do you propose to search them out?
I smiled ruefully. As Your Grace pointed out, no matter how well-spoken or well-educated I am, I will never be nobility. I lack the connections and the resources to research this as thoroughly as I would like, but with your name to open doors, I could make a search of many private libraries. I could access archives and records too private or too hidden to be pruned.
Alvaron nodded, his eyes not leaving mine. I think I understand you. I, for one, would give a great deal to know the truth of this matter.
He looked away as the sound of laughter drifted upward, mixing with the footsteps of a group of approaching nobles.
You've given me a great deal to think about, he said in softer tones. We will discuss this further in more privacy.
What time would be convenient for you to meet, Your Grace?
Alvaron gave me a long, speculative look.
Come to my rooms this evening. And since I cannot give you an answer, let me offer you a question of my own instead.
I value questions near as much, Your Grace.
Chapter 138. Notes. With nearly 5 hours until my meeting with the mayor, I was finally free to go about my business in Severin Low. From the horse lifts, the sky was so clear and blue it could break your heart to look at it. With that in mind, I made my way to the Four Tapers Inn. The taproom wasn't busy, so it isn't surprising that the innkeeper spotted me heading toward the back stairs.
Stop! You!
he called out in broken Aeturin.
Pay! Room only for paying men!
Not wanting a scene, I approached the bar. The innkeeper was a thin, greasy man with a thick Lenati accent. I smiled at him. I was just visiting a friend. The woman in room 3, long, dark hair. I gestured to show how long. Is she still here?
Ah, he said, giving me a knowing look. The girl! Her name, Dinae.
I nodded, knowing Dena changed her name as often as some other women changed their hair. The greasy man nodded again.
Yes, the pretty dark eyes. She gone for long.
My heart fell, despite the fact that I'd known better than to hope she would still be here after all this time. Do you know where she might have gone? He barked a short laugh.
No! You and all the other wolves come sniffing after her! I could have sold knowing to you all to make a thick purse, but no, I hadn't idea.
Might she have left a message for me? I asked without real hope. I hadn't found any letter or note waiting for me at Alvaron's estate. She was expecting me to find her here.
Was she?
He said mockingly, then seemed to remember something.
I think there a note found. Might be. Not much a reader, me. You would like it?
He smiled. I nodded, my heart lifting a little.
She left without payment in her room, he said. 17.5 pennies.
I brought out a silver round and showed it to him. He reached for it, but I set it on the table and held it there with 2 fingers. He scurried off into a back room and was gone for a long 5 minutes. He finally returned with a tightly folded piece of paper clutched in one hand.
I am find it,
he said triumphantly, waving it in my direction.
Not much good for paper here, but kindling.
I looked at the piece of paper and felt my spirits lift. It was folded against itself in the same fashion as the letter I'd had the tinker deliver. If she'd copied that trick, it meant she must have read my letter and left this note for me. Hopefully, it would tell me where she had gone. How to find her. I slid the coin toward the innkeeper and took the note. Once outside, I hurried to the shadow of a recessed doorway, knowing it was the closest thing to privacy I would find on the busy street. I tore the note open carefully, unfolded it, and edged into the light. It read, Dena, I have been forced to leave town on an errand for my patron. I will be away some time, perhaps several span. It was sudden and unavoidable, else I would have made a point to see you before I left. I regret many of the things I said when we last spoke, and wish I could apologize for them in person. I will find you when I return. Yours, Kvothe. At 8th bell, I made my way to the mayor's rooms, leaving Sasura behind. I felt oddly naked without it. It's strange how quickly we become accustomed to such things. Stape showed me into the mayor's sitting room, and Alvaron sent his manservant to invite Meloin to join us at her convenience. I wondered idly what would happen if she decided not to come. Would he ignore her for 3 days in silent rebuke? Alvaron settled onto a couch and gave me a speculative look.
I've heard some rumors surrounding your recent excursion, he said. Some rather fantastic things I'm not given to believing. Perhaps you'd like to tell me what really happened.
For a moment, I wondered how he'd managed to hear about my activities near Levenshire so quickly. Then I realized he wanted to know the details of our bandit hunt in the Eld. I breathed a mental sigh of relief. I trust Daedan found you easily enough, I asked. Alvaron nodded. I regretted having to send him in my stead, Your Grace. He is not a subtle creature. He shrugged.
No real harm was done. By the time he came to me, the need for secrecy was past.
He did deliver my letter, then?
Ah, yes, the letter.
Alvaron pulled it out of a nearby drawer.
I assumed it was some sort of odd joke.
Your Grace? He gave me a frank stare, then looked down at my letter.
27 men, he read aloud. Experienced mercenaries by their actions and appearance. A well-established camp with rudimentary fortifications.
He looked up again.
You can't expect me to believe this is the truth. The five of you couldn't possibly succeed against so many.
We surprised them, Your Grace, I said with a certain smug understatement. The mayor's expression soured.
Come now, all provincial humor aside, I consider this to be in extremely poor taste. Simply tell me the truth and have done.
I have told you the truth, Your Grace. Had I known you would require proof, I would have let Daydan bring you a sackful of thumbs. It took a full hour of arguing to drive the notion out of his head.
This didn't set the mayor back as I expected.
Perhaps you should have let him, he said.
The humor of the situation was rapidly fading for me.
Your Grace, if I were to lie to you, I would choose a more convincing tale.
I let him consider this for a moment.
Besides, if all you want is proof, simply send someone out to verify it. We burned the bodies, but the skulls will still be there. I'll mark their camp for you on a map.
The mayor took a different tack.
What of this other part? Their leader? The man who didn't mind being shot through the leg? The one who stepped into his tent and disappeared?
True, Your Grace. Alvaron eyed me for a long moment, then sighed.
Then I believe you, he said. But still, it's strange and bitter news, he muttered almost to himself.
Indeed, Your Grace. He gave me an oddly calculating look.
What do you make of it?
Before I could answer, there was the sound of a female voice from the outer rooms. Alvaron's scowl vanished, and he sat up straighter in his chair. I hid a smile behind my hand.
It's Maelwyn, Alvaron said.
If I am correct, she is bringing us the question I mentioned earlier. He gave me a sly smile.
I think you will enjoy it. A puzzling thing, indeed.
Chapter 139, Lockless. Stapes escorted Maelwyn into the room while Alvaron and I rose to our feet. She was dressed in gray and lavender, and her curling chestnut hair was pulled back to reveal her elegant neck. Maelwyn was followed by two serving boys carrying a wooden chest. The mayor moved to take his wife's elbow while Stapes directed the boys to set the chest to one side of her chair. Alvaron's manservant hurried them outside and gave me a conspiratorial wink before he closed the door behind himself. Still standing, I turned to Maelwyn and made my bows.
I am pleased to have the chance to meet with you again.
My lady?
I made the last a question, as I wasn't sure how to address her. The Lackless lands used to be a full earldom, but that was before the Bloodless Rebellion, when they still controlled Tinue. Her marriage to Alvaron complicated things too, as I wasn't sure if there was a female counterpart to the title of Mareshan. Maelwyn waved her hand easily, dismissing the issue entirely.
Lady is well enough between us two, at least when we are closeted. I've no need for formality from one to whom I owe so great a debt.
She took hold of Alvaron's hand.
Please, sit if you've a mind.
I made another bow and took my seat, eyeing the chest as casually as possible. It was about the size of a large drum, made of well-jointed birch and bound in brass. I knew the proper thing to do was engage in polite small talk until the matter of the chest was broached by one of the two of them. However, my curiosity got the better of me.
I was told you were bringing a question with you. It must be a weighty one for you to keep it so tightly bound.
I made a nod toward the chest. Maelwyn looked at Alvaron and laughed as if he had told a joke.
My husband said you weren't the type to let a puzzle sit for very long.
I gave a slightly shamefaced smile.
It goes against my nature, lady. I would not have you battle your nature on my account.
She smiled.
Would you be so good as to bring it round in front of me?
I managed to lift the chest without hurting myself, but if it weighed less than 10 stone, then I'm a poet. Maelwyn sat forward in her chair, leaning over the chest.
Lerand has told me of the part you played in bringing us together. For that, my thanks. I hold myself in debt to you.
Her dark brown eyes were gravely serious.
However, I also consider the greater piece of that debt repaid by what I am about to show you. I can count on both hands the people who have seen this. Debt or no, I would never have considered showing you had not my husband vouchsafed me your full discretion.
She gave me a pointed look. By my hand, I will not speak of what I see to anyone, I assured her, trying not to seem as eager as I was. Maloan nodded. Then, rather than drawing out a key as I'd expected, she pressed her hands to the sides of the chest and slid two panels slightly. There was a soft click, and the lid sprang slightly ajar. Lockless, I thought to myself. The open lid revealed another chest, smaller and flatter. It was the size of a bread box, and its flat brass lock plate held a keyhole that was not keyhole-shaped, but a simple circle instead. Maloan drew something from a chain around her neck.
May I see that? I asked.
Maloan seemed surprised.
I beg your pardon?
That key. May I see it for a moment?
God's bother! Alvaron exclaimed. We haven't come to the interesting bit yet. I offer you the mystery of an age, and you admire the wrapping paper.
Maloan handed me the key, and I gave it a quick but thorough examination, turning it in my hands. I like to take my mysteries layer by layer, I explained.
Like an onion, he snorted.
Like a flower, I countered, handing the key back to Maloan.
Thank you.
Maloan fit the key and opened the lid of the inner chest. She slid the chain back around her neck, tucked it underneath her clothes, and rearranged her clothes and hair, repairing any damage done to her appearance. This seemed to take an hour or so. Finally, she reached forward and lifted something out of the chest with both hands. Holding it just out of my sight behind the open lid, she looked up at me and took a deep breath.
This has been, she began.
Just let him see it, dear,
Alvaron interjected gently.
I'm curious to see what he thinks on his own.
He chuckled.
Besides, I fear the boy will have a fit if you keep him waiting any longer.
Reverently, Maloan handed me a piece of dark wood the size of a thick book. I took it with both hands. The box was unnaturally heavy for its size, the wood of it smooth as polished stone under my fingers. As I ran my hands over it, I found the sides were carved. Not dramatically enough to attract the attention of the eyes, but so subtly my fingers could barely feel a gentle pattern of risings and fallings in the wood. I brushed my hands over the top and felt a similar pattern.
You were right, Maloan said softly. He's like a child with a midwinter's gift.
You haven't seen the best of it yet, Alvaron replied. Wait until he starts. The boy has a mind like an iron hammer.
How do you open it? I asked. I turned it in my hands and felt something shift inside. There were no obvious hinges or lid, not even a seam where a lid might be. It looked for all the world like a single piece of dark and weighty wood. But I knew it was a box of some sort. It felt like a box. It wanted to be opened.
We don't know, Maloan said.
She might have continued, but her husband hushed her gently.
What's inside?
I tilted it again, feeling the contents shift.
We don't know, she repeated.
The wood itself was interesting. It was dark enough to be roa, but it had a deep red grain. What's more, it seemed to be a spice wood. It smelled faintly of something. A familiar smell I couldn't quite put my finger on. I lowered my face to its surface and breathed in deeply through my nose, something almost like lemon. It was maddeningly familiar.
What sort of wood is this?
Their silence was answer enough. I looked up and met their eyes.
You don't give a body much to work with, do you?
I smiled to soften any offense the words might bring. Alvaron sat forward in his chair.
You must admit, he said with thinly veiled excitement. This is a most excellent question. You've shown me your gift at guessing before.
His eyes glittered gray.
So what can you guess about this?
It's an heirloom, I said easily. Very old.
How old would you think?
Alvaron interjected hungrily.
Perhaps 3,000 years,
I said. Give or take. Maelowin stiffened in surprise. I am close to your own guesses, I take it. She nodded mutely. The carving has no doubt been eroded over the long years of handling.
Carving?
Alvaron asked, leaning forward in his chair. It's very faint, I said, closing my eyes. But I can feel it.
I felt no such thing.
Nor I, said Maelowin. She seemed slightly offended. I have exceptionally sensitive hands, I said honestly. They're necessary for my work.
Your magic?
She asked, with a well-hidden hint of childlike awe. And music, I said, if you'll allow me. She nodded. So I took her hand in my own and pressed it to the top of the box.
There.
Can you feel it? She furrowed her forehead in concentration.
Perhaps just a bit.
She took her hand away.
Are you sure it's a carving?
It's too regular to be an accident. How can it be you haven't noticed it before? Isn't it mentioned in any of your histories? Maelowin was taken aback.
No one would think of writing down anything regarding the Loklos box. Haven't I said this is the most secret of secrets?
Show me, Alvaron said. I guided his fingers over the pattern. He frowned.
Nothing. My fingers must be too old. Could it be letters?
I shook my head. It's a flowing pattern, like scroll work. But it doesn't repeat. It changes. A thought struck me.
It might be a Yilish story knot.
Can you read it? Alvaron asked.
I ran my fingers over it. I don't know enough Yilish to read a simple knot if I had the string between my fingers. I shook my head. Besides, the knots would have changed in the last 3,000 years. I know a few people who might be able to translate it at the university.
Alvaron looked to Maelowin, but she shook her head firmly. I will not have this spoken of to strangers.
The mayor seemed disappointed by this answer, but didn't press the point. Instead, he turned back to me.
Let me ask you your own questions back again. What sort of wood is it?
It's lasted 3,000 years, I mused aloud. It's heavy despite being hollow, so it has to be a slow wood, like hornbeam or a rennel. Its color and weight make me think it has a good deal of metal in it too, like roa. Probably iron and copper, I shrugged.
That's the best I can do.
What's inside it? I thought for a long moment before saying anything.
Something smaller than a salt box, I began.
Maelowin smiled, but Alvaron gave the barest of frowns, so I hurried on. Something metal, by the way the weight shifts when I tilt it. I closed my eyes and listened to the padded thump of its contents moving in the box.
No. By the weight of it, perhaps something made of glass or stone.
Something precious, Alvaron said.
I opened my eyes. Not necessarily. It has become precious because it is old and because it has been with a family for so long. It is also precious because it is a mystery. But was it precious to begin with? I shrugged. Who can say?
But you lock up precious things, Alvaron pointed out.
Precisely. I held up the box, displaying its smooth face. This isn't locked up. In fact, it might be locked away. It may be something dangerous.
Why would you say that?
Alvaron asked curiously.
Why go through this trouble?
Maelowin protested.
Why save something dangerous? If something is dangerous, you destroy it.
She seemed to answer her own question as soon as she had voiced it.
Unless it was precious as well as dangerous.
Perhaps it was too useful to destroy, Alvaron suggested.
Perhaps it couldn't be destroyed, I said.
Last and best, Alvaron said, leaning forward even further in his seat.
How do you open it?
I gave the box a long look, turned it in my hands, pressed the sides. I ran my fingers over the patterns, feeling for a seam my eyes could not detect. I shook it gently, tasted the air around it, held it to the light.
I have no idea, I admitted.
Alvaron slumped a little.
It was too much to expect, I suppose. Perhaps some piece of magic?
I hesitated to tell him that sort of magic only existed in stories.
None I have at my command.
Have you ever considered simply cutting it open?
Alvaron asked his wife.
Maelowin looked every bit as horrified as I felt at the suggestion.
Never,
she said as soon as she caught her breath.
It is the very root of our family. I would sooner think of salting every acre of our lands.
And hard as this wood is, I hurried to say, you would most likely ruin whatever was inside, especially if it is delicate.
It was only a thought,
Alvaron reassured his wife.
An ill-considered one,
Maelowin said sharply, then seemed to regret her words.
I'm sorry, but the very thought...
She trailed off, obviously distraught. He patted her hand.
I understand, my dear. You're right. It was ill-considered.
Might I put it away now?
Maelowin asked him. I reluctantly handed the box back to Maelowin. If there were a lock, I could attempt to circumvent it, but I can't even make a guess at where the hinge might be, or the seam for the lid.
In a box, no lid or locks. Lackless keeps her husband's rocks. The child's skipping rhyme ran madly through my head, and I only barely managed to turn my laugh into a cough.
Alvaron didn't seem to notice.
As always, I trust to your discretion.
He got to his feet.
Unfortunately, I fear I have used up the better portion of our time. I'm certain you have other matters to attend to. Shall we meet tomorrow to discuss the Emir? Second bell?
I had risen to my feet with the mayor.
If it please your grace, I have another matter that warrants some discussion.
He gave me a serious look.
I trust this is an important matter.
Most urgent, your grace, I said nervously.
It should not wait another day. I would have mentioned it sooner, had we both privacy and time.
Very well. He sat back down. What presses you so direly?
Lerand, Maelowin said with slight reproach, it is past the hour. Hayanis will be waiting.
Let him wait, he said. Quoth has served me well in all regards. He does nothing lightly, and I ignore him only to my detriment.
You flatter me, your grace.
This matter is a grave one, I glanced at Maelowin, and somewhat delicate as well. If your lady desires to leave, it might be for the best.
If the matter is important, should I not stay?
She asked archly.
I gave the mayor a questioning look.
Anything you wish to say to me, you can tell my lady wife, he said.
I hesitated. I needed to tell Alvaron about the false troopers soon. I was sure if he heard my version of events first, I could present them in a way that cast me in a favorable light. If word came through official channels first, he might not be willing to overlook the bald facts of the situation, that I had slaughtered 9 travelers of my own free will. Despite that, the last thing I wanted was Maelowin present for the conversation.
It couldn't help but complicate the situation. I tried one final time.
It is a matter most dark, your grace.
Alvaron shook his head, frowning slightly.
We have no secrets.
I fought down a resigned sigh and drew a thick piece of folded parchment from an inner pocket of my shade.
Is this one of the writs of patronage your grace has granted?
His eyes flickered over it, showing some surprise.
Yes. How did you come by it?
Oh, Lerand, Maelowin said. I knew you let the beggars travel in your lands, but I never thought you would stoop to patronizing them as well.
Only a handful of troops, he said, as befitting my rank. Every respectable household has at least a few players.
Mine, Maelowin said firmly, does not.
It is convenient to have one's own troop, Alvaron said gently, and more convenient to have several. Then one can choose the proper entertainment to accompany whatever event you might be hosting. Where do you think the musicians at our wedding came from?
When Maelowin's expression did not soften, Alvaron continued.
They're not permitted to perform anything bawdy or heathen, dear. I keep them under most close controlment, and rest assured, No town in my lands would let a troop perform unless they had a noble's writ with them.
Alvaron turned back to me. Which brings us back to the matter at hand. How did you come to have their writ? The troop must be doing poorly without it. I hesitated. With Maelowin here, I was unsure as to the best way to approach the subject. I'd planned on speaking to the mayor alone.
They are, Your Grace.
They were killed. The mayor showed no surprise.
I thought as much.
Such things are unfortunate, but they happen from time to time. Maelowin's eyes flashed.
I'd give a great deal to see them happen more often.
Have you any idea who killed them? The mayor asked.
In a certain manner of speaking, Your Grace. He raised his eyebrows expectantly.
Well then?
I did.
You did what?
I sighed. I killed the men carrying that writ, Your Grace. He stiffened in his seat.
What?
They had kidnapped a pair of girls from a town they passed through. I paused, looking for a delicate way of saying it in front of Maelowin. They were young girls, Your Grace, and the men were not kind to them. Maelowin's expression, already hard, grew cold as ice at this. But before she could speak, Alvaron demanded incredulously,
"And you took it on yourself to kill them? An entire troop of performers I had given license to?"
He rubbed his forehead.
"How many were there?"
"Nine."
"Good Lord!"
"I think he did right," Maelowin said hotly. "I say you give him a score of guards and let him do the same to every ravel band of rue he finds within your lands."
"My dear," Alvaron said with a touch of sternness, "I don't care for them much more than you, but law is law when—"
"Law is what you make it," she interjected. "This man has done you a noble service. You should grant him fief and title and set him on your council."
"He killed 9 of my subjects," Alvaron pointed out sternly. "When men step outside the rule of law, anarchy results. If I heard of this in passing, I would hang him for a bandit."
"He killed 9 rue rapists, 9 murdering ravel thieves, 9 fewer edema men in the world is a service to us all."
Maelowin looked at me.
"Sir, I think you did nothing but what was right and proper."
Her misdirected praise did nothing but fan the fire beneath my temper.
"Not all of them were men, my lady," I said to her.
Maelowin paled a bit at that remark. Alvaron rubbed his face with a hand.
"Good Lord, man, your honesty is like a felling axe."
"And I should mention," I said seriously, "begging both your pardons, that those I killed were not Edema Rue. They were not even a real troop."
Alvaron shook his head tiredly and tapped the writ in front of him. "It says here otherwise. Edema Rue and troopers both.
The writ was stolen goods, Your Grace. The folk I met on the road had killed a troop of Rue and taken up their place."
He gave me a curious look.
"You seem rather certain of it."
"One of them told me so, Your Grace.
He admitted they were merely impersonating a troop. They were pretending to be Rue." Maelowin looked as if she couldn't decide whether she was confused or sickened by the thought.
"Who would pretend such a thing?"
Alvaron nodded.
"My wife makes a point," he said. "It seems more likely that they lied to you. Who wouldn't deny such a thing? Who would willingly admit to being one of the Edema Rue?"
I felt myself flush hot at this, suddenly ashamed that I had concealed my Edema Rue blood for all this time.
"I don't doubt your original troop were Edema Rue, Your Grace, but the men I killed were not. No Rue would do the things they did."
Maelowin's eyes flashed furiously.
"You do not know them."
I met her eyes.
"My lady, I think I know them rather well."
"But why?" Alvaron asked. "Who in their right mind would try to pass themselves off as Edema Rue?"
"For ease of travel," I said, "and the protection your name offers." He shrugged my explanation away.
"They were probably Rue that tired of honest work and took up thieving instead."
"No, Your Grace," I insisted. "They were not Edema Rue."
Alvaron gave me a reproachful look.
Come now, who can tell the difference between bandits and a band of Rue?
There is no difference,
Maelowin said crisply. Your Grace, I would know the difference, I said hotly. I am Edema Rue.
Silence.
Maelowin's expression turned from blank shock to disbelief to rage to disgust. She came to her feet, looked for a moment as if she would spit on me, then walked stiffly out the door. There was a clatter as her personal guard came to attention and followed her out of the outer rooms. Alvaron continued to look at me, his face severe.
If this is a joke, it is a poor one.
It is none, Your Grace, I said, wrestling with my temper. And why have you found it necessary to hide this from me? I have not hidden it, Your Grace. You yourself have mentioned several times that I am far from gentle birth. He struck the arm of his chair angrily. You know what I mean! Why did you never mention that you were one of the Rue?
I think the reason rather obvious, Your Grace, I said stiffly, trying to keep from spitting out the words. The words Edema Rue have too strong a smell for many gentle noses.
Your wife has found her perfume cannot cover it.
My lady has had unfortunate dealings with the Rue in the past, he said by way of explanation. You would do well to note.
I know of her sister, her family's tragic shame. Run off and love a trooper. How terrible, I said scathingly, my entire body prickling with hot rage. Her sister's sense does credit to her family, less so the actions of your lady wife. My blood is worth as much as any man's, and more than most. And even were it not, she has no leave to treat me as she did.
Alvaron's expression hardened. I rather think that she has leave to treat you as she will, he said. She was simply startled by your sudden proclamation. Given her feelings about you ravel, I think she showed remarkable restraint.
I think she rues the truth. A trooper's tongue has gotten her to bed more quickly than her sister.
As soon as I said it, I knew I had gone too far. I clenched my teeth to keep from saying anything worse.
That will be all, Alvaron said with cold formality, his eyes flat and angry. I left with all the angry dignity I could muster, not because I had nothing else to say, but because if I had stayed one moment longer, he would have called for guards, and that is not how I wish to make my exit.
Chapter 140, Just Rewards. I was in the middle of dressing the following morning when an errand boy arrived bearing a thick envelope with Alvaron's seal. I took a seat by the window and discovered several letters inside. The outermost one read, Quoth, I have thought a while and decided your blood matters but little in light of the services you have rendered me. However, my soul is bound to another whose comfort I hold more dearly than my own. Though I had hoped to retain your services, I cannot. What's more, as your presence is the cause of my wife's considerable distress, I must ask you to return my ring and leave Severin at your earliest convenience.
I stopped reading, got to my feet, and opened the door to my rooms. A pair of Alvaron's guards were standing at attention in the hallway.
Sir?
One of them said, eyeing my half-dressed state.
Just checking, I said, closing the door.
I returned to my seat and picked up the letter again.
As to the matter that precipitated this unfortunate circumstance, I believe you have acted in the best interest of myself and Vintus as a whole. In fact, I have received report just this morning that two girls were returned to their families in Levenshire by a red-haired gentleman named Quoth. As reward for your many services, I offer the following. First, a full pardon for those you killed near Levenshire. Second, a letter of credit enabling you to draw on my coffers for the payment of your tuition at the university. Third, a writ granting you the right to travel, play, and perform wherever you will within my lands. Lastly, my thanks. Mershon Lerand Alvaron.
I sat for a few long minutes, watching the birds flit in the garden outside my window. The contents of the envelope were just as Alvaron had said. The letter of credit was a work of art, signed and sealed in four places by Alvaron and his chief exchequer.
The writ was, if anything, even more lovely. It was drawn on a thick sheet of creamy vellum, signed by the mayor's own hand and fixed with both his family's